At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Syria, darkness visible since the turmoil at the beginning of the second decade of the 21st century. But now, I welcome Ahmad Sharawi for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, who watches Syria very closely and is a great help to understand the moving story of a man named al-Shara, who is in Damascus, and the forces left from the revolution and the rebellion and the forces that have arrived since then. That would be Turkey, Israel, the United States, and in some fashion the Kurds. However, we begin with news about al-Shara, the self-named president of Syria. Ahmed, a very good evening to you. You have news about Shara and the UN. Please help us.
Good evening, John. So the Syrian Foreign Ministry just announced today or confirmed the news that Shara will be attending the UN General Assembly scheduled to be held between or and from early September until late September, from the 9th, I think, until the 23rd, if I'm not mistaken. And Shara will be the first Syrian president since 1967 to attend a UN General Assembly meeting, meaning that neither Hafez al-Assad nor his son Bashar al-Assad ever attended a UN General Assembly meeting. And this is a very big deal because until this day, Shara is still designated as a terrorist by the United States and is still designated, and he's still designated as a terrorist by the United Nations, as well as his organization, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, as a terrorist organization. So these will be an interesting few days to see if there will be any waivers in order that will be put in order to accommodate for Shara's arrival to the United States.
Meanwhile, back in Syria, I learned from Ahmad's filing at Longword Journal, where you can find his information, the Sunni tribes are restive in northeastern Syria. This is, I'm following Ahmad's very careful reporting, 30% of Syrian territory. Who are they, and what is it? What is their ambition to be restive? Good evening.
So this Syria's tribal composition is very complicated, and we have tribes that are linked to the more extensive tribes that exist in countries like Iraq, Jordan, Saudi Arabia. And a lot of these tribes are currently in the area that is controlled by the Syrian Democratic Forces, a Kurdish-led coalition of groups that, of course, assisted the United States in their operations against the Islamic State. And so there's discussions between the government in Damascus as well as the Syrian Democratic Forces in terms of integrating them into the state. And as you may know, these tribes are of Arab and Sunni background, and thus there's always questions about their loyalty to the government in Damascus or their loyalty to the SDF. And the SDF itself has more than 60% of the SDF is composed of these tribes. So a lot of these tribes that inhabit the Deir ez-Zor province in northeast Syria, which the majority of is controlled by the SDF, are currently mobilizing against the SDF, citing human rights abuses and arrests and things like that. So it's important to keep an eye on them because I'm sure a lot of people remember that the clashes that happened in Sueda between the Druze and the Syrian government last month started between the Druze and the Bedouin Arab Sunni tribes. And so there's questions if the government in Damascus will intervene on behalf of these tribes and trigger a wider conflict with the Kurds in northeast Syria.
You have a quote from Sheikh Faraj al-Salama. Coordination is underway with all the tribes that have called for mobilization. Everyone is waiting for the right moment to begin moving. Liberation of the Syrian Jazeera. What is that? And what is the significance of mobilizing? Are they talking about major military action?
The Syrian Jazeera is northeast Syria. It's the area that is controlled by the SDF. So when they say liberate, that means they want to remove the SDF and become part of the Syrian state that is controlled by Damascus, by Sharia. The significance, of course, I mean, these tribes are these. I mean, they're not. They have no central hierarchy in terms of these. There's usually infighting between these tribes, and they're not united at all. Like even the tribes themselves are not united within their own tribal structure. And so when they talk about mobilization, I think they're over exaggerating when they're saying they're coordinating, because it's a very complicated manner, and each tribe has its own loyalty, and within each tribe there's loyalties to different segments. But again, I think the significance of this is that we might see a confrontation between these tribes in the future with the SDF. And the key question here is if Damascus will intervene and trigger what can be a very bloody and deadly conflict with the SDF.
Let me understand the relationship between these tribes and the SDF. The SDF controls this region, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But it does not win the loyalty of the tribes. They go their own way. Is that how they think of it?
So not all of them. So some of these tribes have integrated into the SDF and are part of its armed forces, mainly because they either see that the SDF gives them, I mean, it was purely speaking, it's for economic reasons. The SDF pays higher salaries than the government in Damascus. But there's also mandatory service in northeast Syria, and given that the majority of the population are composed of Arab tribes, then a lot of these people are forced to join the armed forces in the SDF. But again, the financial incentive is very important here, and essentially some of these loyalties are bought by money.
I had been led to understand that the SDF, the backbone of the SDF is the Kurds, which is a nation that doesn't have a sovereign border. It extends into four different, I believe, Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Jordan even. I'm not sure about that last one, but in any event.
Turkey,
maybe. Yes.
Yeah.
So we're looking at the Kurds being a dominant force, not the biggest number, but a dominant force. Do the Arab tribes have friction with the Kurds?
Absolutely. I think that's the main point of friction is despite the areas that are controlled by the being Arab majority, the Kurds are the backbone of the SDF, and they're in the leadership positions. I'm not saying that there are no Arab leaders within the SDF, but the higher ups are exclusively Kurdish or non-Arabs, and that causes friction, of course.
And the Kurds have a separate and unique, I say, source of income. Do they share that income from Kurdistan in Iraq with the YPG in Syria, or are they separate entities?
No, they do not. Actually, the SDF is reliant on the oil wells and facilities that are present in northeast Syria, and these are majorly, or I guess that's the main source of income for the SDF operations and activities in northeast Syria.
When you say complicated, you weren't kidding. Wow, we've got Arab tribes that are not loyal but are under the boot of the SDF. We've got an SDF that's divided between Arab tribes and Kurds. We've got Kurds that are divided between Kurdistan and YPG. All right, let's get more complicated. As I recall, there are a lot of ISIS families and fighters detained in northeast Syria. Who's in charge of those ISIS, and is ISIS still a factor in all of this confusion?
So who's in charge? The SDF is controlling these camps. But the ISIS is still operating in a lot of these areas. I think, according to the United Nations, they've committed at least 90 attacks in northeast Syria since the fall of the Assad regime. So that's less than a year, they've committed 90 attacks against the SDF. Over the weekend, there was a suicide bombing targeting Syrian army officers. These are forces that are loyal to Ahmed al-Sharaa. So in the past 8 months or 9 months, ISIS has increased its attacks, has intensified its cells all across Syria, and is currently a threat to both the SDF and the government in Damascus.
And the government in Damascus, what is its thinking about northeast Syria? with all these different factions, sometimes at odds with each other, sometimes pointing at Damascus as a problem or a solution. What is the plan in Damascus?
So the plan has been to integrate the SDF into the new Syrian state. That means the government in Damascus will control these provinces. And they've signed an agreement in March detailing this integration, but it is yet to be implemented. Of course, the Kurds are asking for a decentralized state. That means they get to control all the civil bodies in northeast Syria and to preserve their own cultural autonomy. But the government in Damascus has been hesitant and has not provided them with that right. The Kurds have also asked for more constitutional rights within the Syrian constitution, recognition of the Kurdish language, as well as the removal of the word Arab from the official name of the republic. So currently, the official name is the Syrian Arab Republic. The Kurds have asked to remove Arab in order to accommodate the non-Arab components within the Syrian society. Things have been at a deadlock until now. There is still no solution, and you see external partners like Turkey with the Syrian government that have been pressuring the Syrian government to force the Kurds to integrate. They've also threatened military action against the Kurds if they fail to integrate within the near future.
Let's mention the other external players. That would be the United States in the East. Last time I checked, the U.S. had linkage to the Kurds, and Russia in the West with an airbase and a port. Let's start with the U.S. What is the U.S.'s position about the Syrian Democratic Forces and these tribes that are unhappy and al-Shar's intention? Does the U.S. have a policy?
So the U.S. policy, I mean, again, stating that the SDF has been a loyal partner to the United States in fighting against ISIS, even during the days of Bashar al-Assad. But we've seen a shift in U.S. policy over the past few months, mainly after the removal of sanctions. Is that Syria? The U.S. wants to see a centralized Syria, one that is that does not have a federal system or a decentralized system, and that means concentrating power under the hands of Shara. And there's been unverified reports that the U.S. has been pressuring the SDF to integrate. Of course, again, the U.S. policy has been to, in order to ensure stability, that there shall be no separatist ideas or federal cantons in Syria. But for now, I think that's been the main policy for the United States, is that shut out to hold power in Damascus and to avoid instability and dividing up or the carving of Syrian territories.
And the Russians, I know they're in the West and don't come into the Northeast consideration, but do they have a policy about staying in Syria?
So they've been engaged in discussions with Damascus about keeping their bases in Western Syria. Until now, there hasn't been any verified discussions about the future of these bases. But again, since the fall of the Assad regime, and it's been 10 months or 9 months, the Russians still have a presence in Western Syria.
The two remaining external players are Turkey and Israel when we come back. Ahmad Sharawi of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, reporting at Long War Journal. I'm John Patch.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.